granddaddy of them all for a reason, folks. It's WrestleMania week. This is Ruthless Aggression. I'm Pierce, joined as always by Rob and Chris. We are all WrestleMania'd out for today's show. We got WrestleMania 37 coming up on Saturday. It's a two-night show this year. It's going to be really fun to see fans back in the stands. I know like that's a whole controversial thing, but like we here now, okay? We've been watching baseball, enjoying fans in the stands for baseball, so like I feel like we can't be overly critical of fans being at WrestleMania this weekend.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I mean, it's been better. I'm really enjoying having fans back for baseball, and it should be good for WrestleMania.
Oh, it's probably going to be great for wrestling. I mean, we haven't heard like an actual crowd since the Raw after Elimination Chamber. That was March the 9th, I want to say. Yeah, March the 9th, because the next week was 316 day. So yeah, it's been since March 9th, it's now April 4th. So we're well over a year since we've actually heard crowd noise. Tangible crowd noise, not piped in cheers or anything like that.
You're not going to get the piped in, this is awesome, but it's really not.
We may actually hear that chant at like full decibel. So.
Right. And you know what? Actually, no. People are probably going bullshit to just say this is awesome because it's been so long.
Oh, yeah. We've
done all the chants that we hate.
Honestly, I'm like fully expecting them to, you know, go crazy during a match maybe they don't care about, but. At the same time, I'm not even going to be mad at it because these people haven't had the opportunity to do this shit for like 13 months. So I'll let it slide. For once, I'm going to try not to get annoyed.
Yeah, me too. You know, Raw after WrestleMania, if you guys just want to go insane, go ahead and do it because we haven't had the opportunity to enjoy live wrestling in so long. And like I think about it now, I live close to the Palms out here in Vegas now, and that was the site of my last wrestling event. My last wrestling event was an NXT house show at the Palms here in Vegas in mid-February. It was like the Saturday before All-Star Weekend. And I just sit and I think about, you know, how long it's been since we've been able to enjoy this thing that we love so much. And, you know, we kind of take for granted being around each other when we're at these shows and the atmosphere and the feeling that we get when we're together. So having that back and I know for a lot of people, it's going to take some time to get comfortable being in large crowds with people again. I understand that. But I know that first time when I'm able to sit in a wrestling event and enjoy the crowd, enjoy the atmosphere, enjoy what I'm seeing and just vibe with the ambiance, and you know it's gonna be so beautiful and so amazing to my heart, man. So if you are going to WrestleMania, obviously you already know, be safe, don't do stupid shit, social distance, wear your mask, all that stuff. I don't need to tell you that. But yeah, take it in, man, and take it in, enjoy yourself this weekend. It's gonna be very fun, not even just for us. I'm sure the talent is thrilled to have that crowd back and have that energy. Yeah, it's gonna be dope. But we'll preview WrestleMania at the end of the show. We'll switch up this week. Because we also have another WrestleMania to talk about. That's WrestleMania 21. Sunday, April 2nd, 2005, from the Staples Center in Los Angeles, California. This was a part of a line where Vince was like, hey, we're going to do New York, LA, Chicago, and then we're going back to only stadium shows. So this is the second to last arena WrestleMania that we're going to talk about, the next one being next year in Rosemont. Looking back on this card, it's so underrated. I know there's like a lot of filler in there too, but when you just talk about the wrestling, it's such an underrated card, and I was really glad that we got to go back and watch this one. This was a fun show.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, you think of it from a standpoint like, you know, Cena and Batista are going to be the top guys for the rest of the decade and, you know, longer for Cena. You know, Edge is going to be a big part for the next 6 years because of this now. I mean, it's really that's the table for a lot of kind of the future.
You have Money in the Bank, which obviously explodes into
a staple now,
design of its own.
Yeah.
And you know, Edge winning that catapulted him, as did the cash-in. And then you also have the significance of somebody trying to break the Undertaker's streak, which becomes a theme for the next near decade.
Which was never a theme before this year. Nobody really focused and zeroed in on trying to break the streak. So
Yeah, because when we started this, of course, 3 years ago, you know, we got to the Flair-Taker match at Mania X8, and I think that afterwards when, you know, Taker threw up the 10 fingers, I think that's the first time that they actually, like, legitimately acknowledged
it.
Existed. So we've been we've been following this path along to this point with Taker and the increase in significance, and now it's about to, you know, shoot into the stratosphere.
Yeah, man, this is a really fun WrestleMania to go back. Like I said, we will preview 37 coming up in the just a bit. But do we have any historical elements either about this WrestleMania or, you know, in the world surrounding this WrestleMania? We're at the beginning of April 2005. I know we got a particular movie with Dwayne Johnson coming out. I think it came out this weekend, right? Be Cool came out this weekend, right?
Yes, I believe it did. That I know it's opening night for the Major League Baseball.
I forgot about that. Can we just like slightly sit on that for a second? Because it's opening night, Major League Baseball, and this is the year after the Red Sox win the World Series. So what do you do? What else do you do? But Yankees, Red Sox. For some reason, they did it in the Bronx, which, whatever.
Yeah.
But the only reason, like, there's only two reasons I care about this particular game. Correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, but I believe the ace opening day starter for the Yankees this game was Randy Johnson.
Yes, it was. He faced David Wells, former Yankee David Wells.
What? they trotted David Wells out as the opening night starter?
They did. Let's see. Boston that year. Let's see. Who was in their rotation?
Well, they still had Schilling.
They would have had what's his name?
They didn't have Pedro anymore.
Yeah, they didn't have Pedro anymore.
Pedro was gone.
Derek Lowe would have still been there.
Yeah.
Let's see. Did he go to LA after?
No. Actually, yeah, he did go to LA.
Yeah.
So
the first title, he was in LA?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, their rotation going into the year was Tim Wakefield, Bronson Arroyo, Matt Clement, David Wells, and Wade Miller.
Oh God!
Somehow this team won almost 100.
Because that offense
was spring loaded.
Yeah, they returned virtually everybody to that lineup. So
yep.
Yeah, I can understand that, but Randy Johnson making his first start as a Yankee, which was major because it was like, okay, the Yankees are going out and getting one of the greatest pitchers of all time in response to the Red Sox. They're just going to go and win, and then he had the most forgettable run of literally any Hall of Fame pitcher to ever suit up for the Yankees.
Yeah.
But the other reason why I fondly remember that game are the promos leading up for it. And the promos leading up for it had Tears for Fears, Who Killed Tangerine. And so every time that, you know, anytime I really think of baseball at opening day, I hear that song playing in his head. And when you think it's all over, it's not over. It's a wonderful fucking song. Probably going to play it after this.
You know, it's actually funny, when I pointed out to Rob last night when we were going over things that happened on that day, I actually pointed out those promos.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't been able to find them on any like YouTube or Daily Motion thing since then, but I do remember that they existed, so it's hilarious that you brought that up. I definitely remember those promos leading up to the game.
Loved them, man. So yeah, that's what I remember that opening day for. Don't ask me what the Cubs did on opening day because I've been trying so hard to forget. It's also, we're on the road to a White Sox championship. So
yes.
I'm pretty sure we'll be talking about that a lot over the next couple of months. I also feel like we should also point out that, like, if you do want to keep following what we're doing, because we know the network's still putting a lot of stuff up, they do have the Raws dating back all the way to 2003 now. So we at least have that. They're still adding SmackDowns and pay-per-views. We're good. Yeah. We're good.
We're
trying to help you out, but yeah.
The Raws are also mostly all there and intact and not edited, which is surprising considering some of the stuff we've watched in the past year, but yeah.
Also, for the record, I know we could save this for the next one, but since you brought the Cubs up, just a reminder, they beat the Diamondbacks 16-6 on opening day.
Yes, they did.
That's right. 23. That's right, because that was the start of my love affair with Derek Lee. Oh, man. I love that man so much. He had a fucking fantastic year. We were third in MVP voting.
Yeah.
Because it was Pujols who won, and then Beltran was second, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He had a hell of a year that year. And like 2 weeks into it, Nomar fucks up his ankle. And everything goes to shit. Yeah. But, you know, Cubs baseball, we're living the dream again. Anything else that happened?
Your top
five.
We have
to talk about that until, like, can we wait until we go into the Raw after WrestleMania to talk about U of I?
Yes.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yes, we can. And of course, they had defeated Louisville 72-57 in the Final Four, and UNC beat Michigan State 87-74.
Yeah. And the top five movies were Miss Congeniality 2 at number 5, Robots at 4, Guess Who dropping down to 3, and Beauty Shop and Sin City were number 2 and number 1.
I remember Sin City.
Yeah.
So, Sin City was number 1, I'm assuming.
Yes. Patrick. Yes.
Yeah. Also, wow. Fantastic. Robots has been in the top 5 for like last 3 weeks.
It's a kid's movie, man.
Yeah.
You know?
True.
Yeah. It was a real popular kid. I didn't talk about Robots, but,
and then,
you know.
And then really, like, the only big note kind of the week is that WWE and USA have finalized their deal to move back in the fall, and Jeff Jarrett's meeting with Spike TV about TNA replacing WWE. So a couple other things that'll have big impact for the rest of the decade here.
That's interesting, because TNA.
big impact.
TNA about to enter the webcast era.
Yeah.
Where they were playing their episodes of Impact on Real Play.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that.
Yeah, like they, I don't remember when exactly they left Fox Sports Net, but that was such a weird time when I'm like, where can I watch Impact?
I want to say it was sometime between the time of Lockdown and Hard Justice. Because I remember,
I don't even know when those pay-per-views happened. I'm going to guess Hard Justice is November.
Hard Justice was May, and Lockdown was April. So I think they left Fox Sports in the spring because their contract ran out, and then they were on their website for like a good 3 to 4 months.
Ooh. Yeah.
Because I definitely remember it happening in the thick of summer for sure, which is why I say it definitely didn't happen after Slammiversary.
Yeah. Also, some more whispers about maybe doing a Hogan Austin match at WrestleMania 22, but
I remember those rumors.
I mean, that
and obviously never comes.
That came up every year.
It did.
Thank God we didn't do that one, because you know Hogan would not have taken the pin. There's no way Hogan would allow his ego to take that pin, as he rightfully should, because he's the old fart and Stone Cold is the bigger star. I don't care what any 80s babies like to say about Hulkamania, wah, rah, rah, rah. Stone Cold Steve Austin is the biggest star in wrestling history.
Well, and then also on the, like, the week leading up to WrestleMania, Hogan was like, you know, Austin had a cult following, and that's not really what that word means.
No. No. But, no. Donnie Darko had a cult following, okay? Stone Cold Steve Austin saved the WWE.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't care what Hogan has to say about shit. I hate that I have to listen to him next week. I'm going to try not to pay attention. I went to go take a shit when he showed up on this WrestleMania because I just literally do not care for Terry Bollea and anything he has to say.
But, mm-hmm.
You know, hey, that was a thing. That was something that people pushed for a while. And I think the only interaction that the two had in WWE was that tag team, that handicap tag team match before 18. And honestly, I can't even recall if they ever touched. But, you know, that's enough for me. I never needed Stone Cold and Hulk Hogan.
No, yeah, it was always one of those matches that was like, I guess it would be kind of cool, but also, like, Hogan clearly can't wrestle, so what's the point? And it doesn't seem like Austin is going to wrestle again either, so.
Yeah, you can do that with Shawn, because Shawn is somebody that's never been, you know, against taking the pin. But Austin, who is unequivocally a better star, a bigger star, I should say, nah.
Well, and even the Sean stuff, we'll get into it over the summer. Even that's going to turn into a whole mess between the two of them. So
massive fucking mess. And it's all Terry Bollea. I mean, you know, Sean was an asshole, but rightfully. This is one of the few times I could say in Shawn Michaels' life that Shawn Michaels being an asshole, it's kind of justified. when does the A&E series start? Is that next week?
I thought it was next week with the Stone Cold one.
Yeah, I'm losing track. I know they're doing 8 of them. Michaels is one. I'm kind of excited to see Michaels, just to watch him be candid with his drug use.
Yeah. Looks like they start April 18th, and then the treasure hunting show is after.
I'm good on that.
Yeah.
And if you live in Exton, Pennsylvania, or near Exton, Pennsylvania, you can actually see the Austin one a day before at a parking lot theater.
It seems like, you know, good for them.
If you live out there in the boondocks, and it's cool.
Say, where the hell is Exton, Pennsylvania? Let's see.
I'm going to assume it's like north central Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Actually, let's see. It's kind of near Philly.
Yeah, well, there you go.
It's near Norristown, King of Prussia, so you're still kind of near those Philadelphia suburbs. That's actually not the location that I thought it was going to be.
I think the only thing with these is I'm not sure what we're going to find out that we don't already know, but
well, yeah, I mean, I would agree. They're probably not going to uncover a lot, but they'll probably be interesting enough to watch.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I guess you could argue, like, okay, who are these for? Are they for us, or are they for
more
random people?
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, we can get to WrestleMania here.
Yeah, because nothing really happened because it's the beginning of April. Baseball starting in the night. There was a NASCAR race. Kevin Harvick won at Bristol.
There we go.
Besides that, nothing else really going on.
Yeah.
Very quiet in the sports world.
WrestleMania.
The NBA is winding down. Obviously, the men's national championship games happened next.
Mm-hmm. Who won the women's this year, 2005?
Let's see.
Because 04 was Tennessee.
Yeah.
At least I think it was.
2005 was...
Oh, it was Baylor.
Baylor.
Baylor won their first title, though. Oh, screw them.
Yeah, girl.
Okay, look at that little bit of a link.
Yeah.
Baylor
yeah.
winning the Natty in the women's, and then going to the Natty tomorrow.
Yep, mm-hmm. They won in Indianapolis.
No, look at that.
They beat Michigan State. The rest of the Final Four was... LSU, which is, it's funny because Baylor won their first title. Michigan State made their first title game. LSU made their second Final Four. Then you have Tennessee, who at that point had 16 Final Fours.
Yeah.
Crazy.
But yeah, WrestleMania 21 from the Staples Center.
From Staples.
Yes, Staples Center.
Yes.
Lillian Garcia opened the show singing America the Beautiful. We get a supercut of kind of all the parody movie trailers leading to a new one.
Which, for the record, that set, I think it's like top three all time.
Oh, yeah. No, the set's really cool.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's a really nice set. Yeah. It fit the LA, Hollywood theme perfectly.
I was going to say, I liked how they had the curtains down, and then after the performance, they raised them to signify the start of the show, and then they played the super cut.
Yeah.
Which, of course, it's edited on the network. I believe it was behind Those Eyes by Three Doors Down, one of the theme songs from Mania that accompanied it before we got to the...
Yeah, they took off all the theme songs because The Memory Will Never Die isn't on the beginning of the Mania recap.
Yeah.
They don't use Big Time, which... They don't use Peter Gabriel's Big Time on 22, do they?
I hope they do.
I feel like I have to go back and...
If they do, if they don't, I will be so disappointed.
I will be fucking livid if they don't have Big Time.
I think they did on the DVD. The DVD, I believe that they usually
The DVD they did because I had the DVD and obviously those don't alter. I would assume they alter because there's like a time period within the contract. Like we were contracted to use this song for X amount of years and like you know. Streaming and shit like that isn't a part of the contract with most of these. which sucks. Because we remember most of these WrestleManias so fondly because of the theme songs. You know, because, you know, we think back on these WrestleManias, and as soon as we hear that music, we think back to a particular match or a particular moment. Like, you know, I can think of hearing Ladies and Gentlemen and thinking of Jeff Hardy jumping off the top of the ladder through Edge in Money in the Bank. Or obviously, you know, My Way and the promo for Austin Rock. So it does suck when you get to these, especially the WrestleManias, and they don't have the themes. I won't say it took away from the show itself, but it was definitely missing.
Yeah. But yeah, we get a new movie trailer parodying of the Gladiator, and it ends up being Stone Cold, which I kind of forgot about. So that was fun. And then we go to Taz and Michael Cole, and it's time for our first match where Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio are facing off.
And they make it a point to remind you this is the first time in WrestleMania history that two tag team champions are facing off against each other at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I also believe it was the first time that two Mexican superstars led off of WrestleMania. It's obviously the very last WrestleMania for Eddie.
Yeah.
It is. Eddie comes out, you know, nice looking low rider. Rey comes out with a new custom attire, foregoing the superhero act though, because the previous 2 years he was Daredevil and then the Flash.
Mm-hmm.
This year he's not, you know, he's representing the country of Mexico with the flag colors adorned on him. And everything, but that mask.
Right? Yeah, the mask was clearly like bothering him because it didn't
the whole time.
It didn't go all the way around his head.
All the way around his head, so, and he kept like loosening. I remember watching. Yeah, just like that mask. Right?
Yeah, this is among the weaker of his costumes. I get why he went with it because, you know, it's not too far from his hometown, San Diego. It's really the closest he's ever to get to San Diego. You know, he's shouting out his Mexican-American heritage, but yeah, this was kind of trash.
Yeah. I mean, the match itself was good. He had a really cool corkscrew plancha on Eddie on the outside. And then Eddie would go for the three amigos, and Rey countered into 619 on the third one, but Eddie moved. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, they did know each other, like, back of their hands.
Yeah. They did the three amigos again, and he hit it this time, but Rey moved out of the way of the frog splash. Then Rey hit the 619, but Eddie countered the West Coast Pop into a powerbomb, so kick out again there. And then Eddie tries to go for a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker, and Rey just rolls him up and gets the win. So, I mean, that's the way you have to have it end. Yeah. I mean, you know, for a match like that, yeah.
Excellent then, opener. It obviously leads to more with Eddie and Rey throughout the year, and we'll get to that. It just really made me sad. You know, Eddie in his WrestleMania matches, because if I'm going back through my Rolodex in my head to recall, he was injured 2000. 2001, he defended the European title against Test.
Mm-hmm.
2003 was the triple threat tag, and then obviously the match with Kurt, and then this. But I feel like these last 3 years, Eddie was kind of, you know, putting himself into another gear at WrestleMania, no matter who he was facing. This was special for him because this is a brother. This is somebody that he has worked with for the better part of 10 plus years. They've been meshed so well together. I'm just like, man, I would have loved to see Eddie have an opportunity at an actual WrestleMania main event, not just opening the show. Like, obviously opening the show is a right for WrestleMania, but, it just had a little bit of a sour taste knowing what's to come in November, but.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it was a really good match.
Yeah. JBL and Orlando Jordan are walking through the back, and they come across Ric Flair and Triple H. Triple H makes fun of him for calling himself the wrestling god. JBL says that he's the only champion to have never lost. And
once again, trotting that line.
Yeah. Triple H says we'll see who still has their title at the end of the night.
Well, it's kind of ironic.
It's a good segment, though, because I think everybody knew what was going to happen. Everyone knew they both were going to lose their titles, but, like, you know, you had to have them have that little mini interaction. And I don't really think that Trips and JBL have ever come across each other. They haven't had a reason to, because Bradshaw, like, who gave a fuck about Bradshaw?
Yeah.
So I it's just kind of cool.
Yeah, this was cool, especially because they started taking shots at each other the past few weeks on Raw and SmackDown.
Mm-hmm.
Triple H, yeah, definitely taking shots. And then,
and these were, you know, the two big champs, the two big heel champs of that era.
Yeah.
And at this point, you know, everything felt kind of special because of the split. So having this interaction happen was pretty cool.
Yeah. Adam Sandler and Adam Sandler's friend Rob Schneider are here. So that's fun.
He's the star of the hit movie The Animal.
That's true.
And the hot chick.
Wasn't
Deuce Bigelow, man. Chigelow.
I forgot if it was here or later. Was it someone from the Black Eyed Peas in the background also?
Yeah, that was Taboo in the background.
Yeah,
there you go. Yes. Yeah. So
I was just like, you just totally just disregarded the Black Eyed Peas in the background. And this is crazy because this is the hottest the Black Eyed Peas have ever been.
Yeah. Exactly.
For bad reason, because they totally just said, hey, we're not neo soul rappers anymore. We're gonna add Fergie and become a pop group, but still.
It's time for the Money in the Bank ladder match. Chris Benoit versus Chris Jericho versus Christian versus Edge versus Kane versus Shelton Benjamin.
They made this a big deal.
Oh yeah.
The presentation.
I
thought it was cool. Kane came out, all the ladders were on fire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then everyone going after Kane right when he comes out. That's good stuff.
Yes.
Edge and Christian hit like a ladder concerto on him.
Yep. And then Jericho eventually gets everything officially started because Christian's trying to pull a ladder in and he just runs around and just jumps in, hits it, and then hits Christian's jaw. And away we go.
Yeah. Really probably Shelton Benjamin's best work.
Oh, without a doubt.
Just great stuff.
Excellent here. He's the MVP of this match. Like,
yeah,
it's crazy how much he takes over this match. But you know, coming out of it, you would probably think that Shelton was going to get pushed to the fucking moon.
Yeah.
He was excellent. And I tweeted last night, like, it's crazy how he was the MVP of that match. He was fucking great. What was I getting ready to say? That headbutt is vicious and gnarly, and every time I see it, knowing what's to come in a couple of years, it just makes me cringe.
Well,
he went off the very top of the ladder. It's not even like he wrapped his legs around to go off the second to last rung or the third to last rung. He was off the top of the damn ladder.
Well, and the thing is, too, he's the only person standing when he goes to do it. So he could have just moved the ladder and, like, tried to get the belt instead. But, yeah, he did a... And, I don't know, like, the diving headbutt, obviously he's not hitting the guy's head every time, but it's still not a move you should be doing.
No, it's not.
Because there are times that he clearly does hit the guy's head.
And he busts his fucking cranium wide open here, so...
Yeah.
And It's very cringy to watch, and it's even cringier to see him like spaz out after hitting the move.
Yeah.
Like, okay, are you like selling? Is that what's actually happening? Because you're
worried. That's what I wonder, man. Like, that's whenever I see that's what I wonder. It's like, are you just pulling a really good sell job, or did that move just take so much out of you right there? Because
like.
Knowing his mental troubles and what he's going to end up doing, it's just like, it's very hard to watch with the force.
Yeah. But what was not hard to watch, going back to Shelton, was Shelton running up the ladder. Because that's still an all-time moment.
Dude, he has this. He has the T-bone off the ladder. Like, oh my God, he was amazing in this match.
Yeah, and then he gets...
He's in the like first five, I want to say. No, he's in four of the first five. He missed 2007.
I'm pretty sure the Shawn match is coming up in the next couple weeks as well, so that's going to be a lot of fun to go back.
Yeah, that's in May.
Mm. They
do that, I want to say beginning of May, the Gold Rush Challenge.
Tomko comes in, sets up the ladder, and tries to help Christian climb it, but Kane takes Tomko out, and dumps Christian off the ladder. Benoit comes in and climbs the ladder, but Kane sits up. Kane climbs the other one. They fight a bit. Benoit headbutts him again. And it looks like Benoit's going to climb, but Edge hits him with a chair, and he falls off, and Edge goes up and gets the briefcase.
really the only logical winner of this match, if you want to say Christian, I'm not going to hold you. But yeah, this was the match that was designed to catapult Edge into a star, and we're going to see him do work with that briefcase over the next year.
Well, yeah, because I mean, it's been since at least Taboo Tuesday that they've been, you know, trying to do some stuff with him. You know, I think they thought he was going to win and face Triple H at Taboo Tuesday, which we talked about, you know, a couple months ago. But yeah, I mean, this is like the time where they're clearly all in on Edge. You know, they trust him to stay healthy, and you know, they're going to go with it. And even if he doesn't stay healthy, he's got a year to figure this out. So
yeah, exactly. You think about it. He missed the last two Manias, and now he's been healthy pretty much for the entire year, except for that one, little spurt in the summer when he dropped the title. But yeah, I mean, he's earned their trust clearly.
Yeah,
and they're putting him in a position to succeed at this point.
Yeah, so Edge has a briefcase, and whoever is champion needs to be on the lookout. We keep going, and Eugene is here, which was a surprise.
It was.
You know, he's been injured. Starts talking about his favorite WrestleMania moments, and Hassan and Daivari come out, and Hassan gets the mic from Eugene, says that LA is filled with fakes and phonies and has a long and profound history of prejudice and bigotry. I mean, not wrong, but not, you know, Hassan has never been pinned. He should be in action tonight. Hassan and Daivari going to make their own WrestleMania moment. They start beating up Eugene, and they put him in the camel clutch, but then Hulk Hogan comes out and saves him. Yeah, so... Hogan Knows Best is coming soon, so yeah, that's fun. Also, David Arquette was with Hulk Hogan's family.
Okay.
I don't know why David Arquette was there. That was really weird.
It's like there's Hulk Hogan's family and David Arquette celebrating ringside. So yeah, that was fun.
Just really strange.
We move on to Undertaker against Randy Orton.
Undertaker's entrance was cool because he levitated and he was like gliding down the ramp and not walking or whatever.
That was so cool.
I remember wanting that entrance to happen in the SmackDown vs. Raw games.
Yeah.
I don't remember if they ever actually put that in.
I don't know either. But like, yeah, that was super fucking cool. And one of his cooler entrances at a WrestleMania.
Yeah. The fans at the beginning were not really all that into it. No. Which I thought was surprising.
Well, I think Orton at this point, I wouldn't say he's unsalvageable, but I think people soured on him a little bit because his face went stunk. But, and it's interesting. I wonder what, like, I know people obviously enjoy The Undertaker, but, like, I wonder what the overall general feeling like him was at this
point. Yeah. Yeah.
Especially considering just the year that he had. If he comes back, he's the dead man. They do the
new Booker T stuff for a while. His JBL stuff doesn't work.
And they do the dumb shit with the Dudleys and Paul Bearer.
Mm-hmm.
And then they do the crap with Heidenreich for like 3+ months. And then they have him do the Luther Reigns up until the Orton stuff starts. So they have not really given him anything good.
Yeah.
And like you said, the JBL stuff just does not work at all whatsoever.
The
crowd's actively crap at
him. Undertaker hits a big boot. And turns and runs at Randy, but Randy hits a power slam.
That was cool.
It was a cool spot. Earl Hebner takes a ref bump because he's a dumb dipshit and this is his last WrestleMania.
Thank God.
Bob Orton comes in, clotheslines Undertaker, and he's got his cast on.
See, this is an example of a really great false finish and also like using the proper resources. Like Bob Orton, they teased it, they were in on it, obviously was around for the Hall of Fame, so you might as well use him. I have one critique here. One critique. I think it would be that after the ref bump happens, I would have had Bob Orton come in, hit Taker with the cast, but not knock him out. I would put him on, you know, jello legs, have Orton hit the RKO, and then have him go for the pin to kind of, you know, make it seem like, oh my God, he might actually lose because Bob Orton hit Taker with the cast. Because no one at that point really, you know, did interference against The Undertaker, if you think about it.
Yeah.
So it'd be like, oh my God, they're going to steal this and take, you know, have the whole thing. But it worked because the crowd was baited into it, but that would be my only critique of the situation.
Yeah. Obviously, Undertaker kicks out after that, gets Randy up for a choke slam a little bit later, and Randy counters into the RKO on the way down.
Just phenomenal.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Then Randy tries to tombstone Undertaker, but Undertaker counters it into one of his own and gets the victory, and he's 13-0 at WrestleMania. So
solid. I think it was a solid match. Like you said, yeah, they weren't really into it at the beginning, but I think they worked a good pace. And, you know, it's the reason why this feud is going to carry on really through, what, December?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, you know, Randy's going to go take his time off and get his shoulder fixed or whatever he needs to do, but he'll be back, and, yeah.
He comes back down through the draft.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah. So he's off through the draft, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, because if I recall correctly, I think he's on the Raw after Mania, and then after that, he disappears for 2+ months.
Yeah.
And then he comes back, obviously, with the draft.
Christy Emmy against Trish Stratus for the Women's Championship. Christy hit a Twist of Fate, and Trish kicked out, and then Trish would hit the chick kick and get the victory. It's her only career WrestleMania singles win.
Really?
Yep.
Is this her only... Oh. I was going to say, it's obviously not her only singles match in WrestleMania because of what happens next year. But, yeah, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess
Because the first two matches were both multi-women matches. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Jazz retained in the first one, and the second one, Trish won title from Victoria. Yeah. So
mm-hmm. Yep.
I think about that because I'm like, okay, well, and she also has a third. No, does she have a third one? No, she doesn't have a. Oh yeah, she does have a third one. I couldn't remember if she was in the Sticky match, but she was in the Sticky match. So she has three WrestleMania wins.
Mm-hmm.
Singles one.
Yeah, this was okay. I mean, you know,
well, it was
Can I play the greatest of all time game? Is Trish Stratus's legacy tarnished by the fact her only WrestleMania singles win was against Christy Hemme?
That's interesting because I think if you brought that up to people, they would probably be surprised.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was surprised, but
yeah.
Moving along, we get Kurt Angle against Shawn Michaels. I mean,
Lord. I ran this back because it was so great.
You know, the thing is it's 25 minutes, and you know they're not over relying on the false finishes. I mean, they do a few of them, but they're more
guided towards the end.
Mm-hmm. Like if this was the Shawn Michaels performance that every single wrestler of the past 10 years modeled themselves after, it would probably be a better place instead of, you know, what they chose to do instead. But
what do you mean?
Yeah, I mean, well, it feels like, you know, Michaels kind of played Angle's game early on. He was able to, you know, not just do his thing. He wasn't, you know, over reliant on looking at his hands or whatever, you know,
stuff, I guess,
the over the top stuff. Yeah. He didn't do it. He just went out there and wrestled a good match. And I think that's kind of more of the Shawn Michaels influence we could use, but
I would agree with that. You know, we're talking about pace, and you know, these two worked such an excellent style because it was, at least in the beginning, more focused on Kurt's strengths,
mm-hmm.
you know, his wrestling ability, his tactical. Aspect of Kurt Angle, which we don't see out of Shawn Michaels ever. But, you know, Shawn knows how to wrestle. It's just he's worked this WWE style for so long that we very rarely, if ever, got to see it. But you actually put him in there with a dude who calls himself a wrestling clinic, and that's kind of what we got here. We got excellent wrestling. We got kind of a Texas Catch Can, you know, style of wrestling in the beginning stages, and then as it progressed and the drama kept elevating is when you got the selling. And I think and to Shawn's credit in this match, Shawn was not really overselling, not until that final sequence.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, to take two guys who are, you know, I don't know that Michael's at the top of his game right here, but he's pretty close, and Kurt probably definitely is.
I would say he is.
Pete Kurt Angle.
You know, even with the neck injuries and all that, you know, his rookie year is obviously good, but this is more refined and he's, you know, he knows what he's doing and just kind of let them go out there and do their thing. And it doesn't feel like 25 minutes or whatever it is.
It's a match.
Yeah.
It's one of the best matches of all time. It's one of the best WrestleMania matches of all time. It's probably top. I shouldn't say probably. It's definitely top three. all time.
Yeah. I'm gonna go out on the limb, and I'm gonna say that it's the greatest WrestleMania match of our era. So let's go 2000 on through, because I want to give respect to Austin Bret. Let's go 2000 on through. The only match that probably stands up with it are the Shawn Taker matches. And the older I get and the more I watch those, the less I like them. And I, every time I watch Shawn and Kurt, it's like it's the first time I watched it. There's something magical watching those two touch and watching them interact and truly putting on performance. And then on top of that, the crowd is just hanging on every fucking false finish, every ankle lock, every ankle slam, every super kick. They're on their feet the entire time, and I'm just watching that match, and I had to run it back because it's so goddamn good. It's so good. I went to go watch the 30-minute Iron Man match that they have later on in the year at the Raw Homecoming. That's how much I loved watching this match twice on the rethrough. It's so goddamn good, and I see it in some people's placements. They don't have a top five. I'm going to go ahead and say it. It's probably the greatest WrestleMania match of our era.
Yeah.
You can throw what you want out there. I'll hear it. But it has a very strong case for the greatest WrestleMania match of our era.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Kurt going for the moonsault, that's not something we saw too often from him. You know, the top rope angle slam.
Moonsault.
Yeah.
So pretty.
That top rope angle slam is not something that we saw a whole bunch of. You know, Kurt talking shit and then just getting sweet chin music out of nowhere is good stuff. And then really the finish, you know, maybe they let it go a little too long, but
he was toiling.
You know, he could have tapped a little bit earlier, but
that was the
that's just nitpicking, really. I mean, it's
exactly.
It's just good stuff, just start to finish.
Yeah, I chalk that up to the crowd. And just the crowd just hanging on, you know, whether or not Shawn would tap, whether he would fight for the rope. He wasn't going to. There was nothing left. But just an excellent sequence for like those final 2 minutes when Kurt's just got that ankle lock in it. He keeps pulling away from the rope and then he tightens it. And it's so dramatic, man.
Yeah.
I honestly, if you are an aspiring wrestler, if you love wrestling, go watch Shawn and Kurt at WrestleMania and study it and model your storytelling in the ring after that. Because that was just excellent.
Yeah. Then we move on to Piper's Pit. I mean,
I just want to say I wish that Roddy Piper was still with us.
Oh, yeah.
That was my first
100%.
First and pervading thought when I watched this back yesterday.
Yes. Yes, 100%, man. Just for the personality that Piper was, you know, we don't have that kind of brash personality in professional wrestling the way that Roddy was. So it's endearing and it's lovable.
And I think he was only probably about 62, I want to say, when he passed. So really,
yeah, he was young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 61.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean it. But yeah, I know. I thought it was cool. You know, him and Austin are like taking shots at each other. And then Carlito comes out and says that no one wants to see either of them anyway. And Piper gets the apple and spits it at him. And then Carlito attacks him. And Austin just kind of lets him do it for a while.
That part was fun.
And then
very, very Austin, because it made sense.
Yeah.
It wouldn't help.
And then he gets involved and stuns Carlito. And then they drink some beers and Piper gets stunned too. So
good segment.
Then Aki Bono beat Big Show in a sumo match. I don't know if you guys have anything more to.
I skipped it.
Yeah. And then it's time for our two main events. First is JBL against John Cena. JBL comes out with a full like presidential motorcade.
Yeah, and money falls from the sky.
Yeah,
the JBL.
Okay, so the match itself isn't good.
It's not
like.
No.
And it doesn't matter that it's not good because.
No, of course. Exactly.
You know.
It's a launching point for something.
Yeah.
It was only like what, 10 minutes?
Yeah, I don't know if Kurt and Shawn went long or somewhere along the way someone went long and they had to cut this a little bit, but.
Yeah, it went 11:26.
But also, I mean, they did what they had to do here. You know, they had JBL get the upper hand for most of it, and then Cena fought back and hit his moves, and I mean, he won the title. That's what you had to do. Mm-hmm. Move on from there.
It doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be a fucking instant classic. It doesn't have to be a 5-star match. You know, you know what John Cena can do in the ring, and at this point, it's not like John Cena is a fucking a wrestling master. He has a limited move set, and JBL is JBL. So, you know, for 11 minutes and change, we got what we got. Cool. The more important thing here is the coronation of John Cena, and it's been 17 years, and we're just now not hearing the trumpets anymore. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's a real bummer that he's probably not going to show up at WrestleMania this year, because it doesn't feel the same without him.
Yeah, it's not going to. 2019. He's physically been at every WrestleMania since he's joined the company.
Mm-hmm.
So to not have him if he doesn't show up at all, it's gonna be really weird. He's still in Vancouver shooting the Peacemaker series, right?
I believe yes.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So he's not coming back. But, yeah. It is a bummer. It is a bummer because I do want to see John Cena come back. You know, he has to get 17. I would be really bummed if John Cena does not come back and win 17. But,
mm-hmm.
But that's fine. You know, like let John Cena go do what he needs to do in Hollywood. I am a big believer in absence makes the heart grow fonder. When you are allowed to miss something or miss somebody,
it's
a good thing. It's a beautiful thing. So we don't need John. We need John. We don't need John. Let John do his thing. And then when he comes back and then we're all just going gaga over John Cena probably winning 17. It matters a whole hell of a lot more than had he done it, say, 2018 or something like that.
Mm. They bring the Hall of Famers out, so good to see all those guys, even though we've seen a handful of them tonight already. Mm-hmm. The video package for next year's WrestleMania, which will take place in Chicago. Technically, I mean, you know, yeah. And then it is time
for the convention at the Rosemont, whatever. I forgot what the fuck they
call it. The Stevens Center.
Yeah.
Donnelly Stevens Convention Center, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't going out for that.
Yeah, and it's time for Batista against Triple H. Motorhead's here to play Triple H's entrance.
Lemmy is butchering every line of that song because he's Lemmy.
This is the second time that he's done that, too, because he did that at X7 as well.
Mm-hmm. And then Batista comes out second. So usually you get the champion out second, but in both of the last two matches, we got the challenger coming out second.
Yep.
I don't know. I mean, I don't like this match all that much either. Like,
it definitely exists. There's some good storytelling bits here, especially towards the end when Batista's fighting out of the pedigree. I think Triple H sold that really well. Obviously, Triple H is also leaking like crazy after he got, I think, was it catapulted into the ring post?
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like they do a little too much. You know, you get the ref bump, you get, you know, like, I know when you're facing Triple H, you have to deal with him and Flair or whatever, but, you know, you could have shaved a little bit of time off this and cut out some of the other stuff, but, you know, again, it's like the Cena match where, from a historical standpoint, it's going to kind of shape how the decade goes for the rest of, you know, when, because Batista leaves in like 2009, I believe, right? He gets hurt. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, it's fine, and it's not an all-time great WrestleMania main event. Obviously, it's probably in the lower third or so, but you know, it's fine. It's more of what it signified.
100%. And now you have the two guys who are going to leave the WWE at least for the next 5-6 years, and Batista goes away. And I don't even know in hindsight if we knew what both John Cena and Batista would be. I think, you know, in Batista's lane, I would have figured that he would have been a bigger star than John Cena. Just off of, you know, having the build that he has, I would assume he would have been the bigger star than John Cena. And then, you know, for Cena, knowing that he was going to be that star, I still wouldn't never believe he would hit like Rock level of popularity to the point where he transcends professional wrestling. Like John, it didn't take John Cena long to transcend professional wrestling. And this is not even counting the platinum recording album he has coming up in a couple months, which, by the way, John Cena is a platinum selling rapper. Did you know that? A lot of your favorite rappers didn't go platinum, but John Cena did. I would have never foreseen Cena being as big as he is to the point where he can be on a Mount Rushmore of professional wrestlers and now going off doing, and even back to Batista. I would have never believed Batista would be a Hollywood superstar, let alone a Hollywood star. Like, you know, he's in a weird dichotomy where he's doing these like shitty Steven Seagal movies, but then he's also doing blockbuster films.
Yeah.
Crazy, man.
Well, yeah, and you know, I think The Rock really opened doors for all this. I mean, I know Hogan was in movies and stuff too, but The Rock really showed that you can actually be like a big, because Hogan was a wrestler who was in movies. The Rock at this point is an actor. I don't know.
That's the problem with Austin, is Austin's a wrestler who's in movies. Rock, you know, took his craft and he took it seriously. And you saw it with Batista, how he made that transition and he just went full in on acting, and then you got to see it with you're seeing it with Cena now. Mm-hmm. Cena got his little taste where he was doing cameos and shit like that, and then he did what's the parental movie?
I forgot the name of it. He was in Daddy's Home.
No, well, no, I wasn't thinking about that. I was thinking of the one with him, Jason Sudeikis.
Was it Blockers?
Blockers, yeah.
Blockers, yes. Then, like, it wasn't really until Blockers came out and, like, we really got to see how good John Cena can be in a movie that he started to go full throttle and make something out of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Rock definitely deserves a lot of credit. And I know, like, with the stuff with him and Cena over the next couple of years, Cena's pushing back. And it's kind of ironic how now Cena's become who he hated. But I ultimately think all of that's necessary. You know, even the back and forth between Rock and Cena and wrestling pushing back over, you know, the thought that you can also be a Hollywood star and love this business.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of that was necessary to get to the point where we're at now, to where you have somebody like a Sasha Banks who, you know, loves wrestling, is kind of in a weird holding pattern with it. And then here along comes this opportunity in Star Wars and take it and you run with it. And now you have, you know, something else to sink your teeth into that's deeper than wrestling. You know, Rock deserves so much of the credit for that. And Cena and Batista, you know, not only picking up the ball on the wrestling side, but then being able to effortlessly transition to Hollywood. Definitely a big thing. And that all started here at 21. So... I'm not sure anybody thought or knew what would happen with the two of them, but we got here. Glad we got here. Batista is technically a Hall of Famer, but he'll do his actual induction probably next year.
Mm-hmm.
Cena will obviously go down in history as one of the greatest of all time. So, yeah, I think ultimately this WrestleMania here did its job. It elevated two brand new stars, and it gave you moments that stand the test of time.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, WrestleMania 21 is in the books. We'll go Raw after WrestleMania, and then SmackDown on the week after edition. We'll come back after WrestleMania. We'll preview WrestleMania 37, or we'll recap WrestleMania 37, and then we'll talk about the Raw after and SmackDown after in 2005. But that leads us now to WrestleMania 37, live in person, Raymond James Stadium, April 10th and 11th. I don't know if this will eventually lead to two night manias in the future. I've said they'll go two nights for a while. I just didn't think that it will be under pandemic circumstances.
So I
hate to even like dunk on that one, because it's like you can never foresee a fucking global pandemic, thousands and thousands of people dying, and hey, you know, now we got 2-day WrestleManias, but we'll see how this shapes up with how much attendance is it going to be? Because it is Florida. It's not like Florida has a cap.
I thought it was about like 25,000, like the Super Bowl, because I know they were going to maybe try like 40 or so, but I think it's around 25, I believe.
Okay. I don't think that's bad. Yeah, I see the Tampa Bay Times confirmed capacity for each night would be 25,000 spectators. Attendees will be separated by pods with physical distancing in place. Temperature checks, wellness screenings are in place, as well as requirements for masks. Free masks are available. Transactions are paperless. So this is kind of where we're at now.
It looks like
WrestleMania, I think the paperless thing is something that you should know. Don't carry cash.
Yeah, because it looks like they have an app that if you're going and you can like order your food on it and stuff, and your merch, and go pick it up, and it's really convenient. I mean, so
they've kind of been doing that with baseball. I know there were some issues with it opening day with the Cubs, but that's what they're kind of doing in baseball. I've heard that you order your food on like the ballpark app or something like that. They'll send you a text when it's ready to go pick up. You know. It's crazy how, like, because of a pandemic, we've all caught up to the times technology-wise, but, you know, here we are. We'll go by the nights. I'm pretty sure that, you know, you'll see some matches added over the next couple of nights. And actually, there was one that I just saw scroll down my timeline a couple of minutes ago while we were talking about 21. So I want to bring that back up, and it'll lead into night two, actually. So there's going to be a Fatal 4-Way tag team match on night one of WrestleMania. I'm not sure if it's going to be on the pre-show or WrestleMania proper. It features Lana and Naomi, the Riott Squad, Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke, and Natalya and Tamina. And the winner on night one will move on to night two to face Nia and Shayna for the WWE Women Tag Team titles. This is a little bit more interesting after Talking Smack the other day. And, you know, the conversation Heyman had with Natty and Tamina. And I don't even want to say what your father would have done. Yeah, we all had the same thought there. So I could see them winning. But to me, I would love to see Lana and Naomi walk out of WrestleMania with those tag titles. So I'm sticking with them.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Billy Kay and Carmella got added to this just because of what they've been teasing. I would be surprised if they were left off, just because, like I said, they were kind of teasing it on TV on SmackDown, so that maybe they make it a 5-way. But yeah, Lana and Naomi need to win, and then they need to beat Shayna and Nia. I feel they can build a nice little rivalry out of this, even if they have played this entire feud out with God help me how many matches they've had on Raw since October in some kind of combination. Ideally, they don't run Liv and Ruby into the ground, which makes it completely unlikely that they win. I don't see it with Dana and Mandy at all. And I mean, I don't know about Natty and Tamina. I would probably hate the crap out of it because the match would suck. No disrespect to them, I guess, but you know, them versus Shayna and Nia does not sound appealing at all whatsoever. I don't care what Natty feels about that freaking dumb tier list or whatever. If she thinks that she's worth more than a dollar, that's great. But that doesn't mean that it's going to make an appealing match. So just go with Lana and Naomi, and you can crown Lana and Naomi. I think they're a team that you can, you know, make a lot out of. Lana's clearly improving. They clearly like working with each other, and based off just, you know, TikTok videos and what we see on Instagram, it seems like all four of them genuinely enjoy working with each other and doing these videos, so why not? Just do it.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's fair. You know, I think Naomi and Lana's a good pick. You know, they're a good team. Everyone would like to see Naomi finally have a title again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And like I said, I mean, the Riots would be the most preferred option from what I've seen, but again, they ran them into the ground. They don't need to give them the the titles when they're ice cold. So you made that mistake. You can repay for it later, but go with Lana and Naomi. Why not?
Yeah.
Yep. Let's move on this card. We've got a singles match between Cesaro and Seth Rollins. This is Seth's second straight singles match on the WrestleMania card. Last year was Kevin Owens. This year, Cesaro has not had. Has Cesaro had a non-tag match at WrestleMania?
He was in the Andre. Besides that, no, he's worked in tags. This is his first singles match at Mania.
That's pretty cool. I think that's really, really cool, man. And it's also a question of, does Seth need the win?
No. Cesaro should win.
Yeah. Seth is in a position where I think at this point he's Teflon.
Yeah.
I would agree.
Yep.
I would agree. Not much to talk about there. We're getting a steel cage match between Braun and Shane.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Only reason I'm saying Braun is because I assume Shane's going to jump off the steel cage at some point.
Shane will do something crazy. The match will probably be better than we anticipated being, but it's still going to be a drag. Braun's going to win.
Yeah, I mean, they've done a really poor job building it.
No one's interested in it. You know what the thing is? Like, I know that there are...
Both people either like Shane or indifferent towards him.
Well, that and the fact that I know that there are Braun Strowman fans out there, but he genuinely just doesn't do anything for a lot of people at this point.
Yeah.
You have, like, there's a role for everybody, and his role is what it is, but nothing feels similar with him at all compared to, like, even 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's fair. I'll still pick him to win this match.
Absolutely. If Shane wins like they did back at Mania 35 with him against The Miz, I'll be genuinely annoyed.
Mm.
Just have Braun win and just end this right now. Because you know what else it is? It's like, They're involving Elias and Jackson Riker into this, and it sucks, and I don't want to see that continue.
Exactly.
Yep. For the Raw Tag Team Championships, we have Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods, The New Day, taking on AJ Styles and Omos in his first WWE match. And I think it's... I don't want to say it's obvious that AJ Styles and Omos is going to win. I'm just going to say that they should win.
Agreed.
Got almost in his first match. He's gonna do some real crazy big guy shit.
Yep.
And I think those are two dudes to do some real crazy big guy shit with, because they'll bump their asses off for him.
Yeah.
And then AJ, who it's hilarious, he's the Owen Hart of this match. He's just damn good. And you know, this would make him the Grand Slam champion. Make him a Grand Slam champion at WrestleMania. I think AJ is somebody that you can also throw a bone here, given how well he worked last year with Taker.
Yes.
Which technically, AJ Styles is wrestled at WrestleMania main event. How about that? Sure. How about that? It's another accolade to the greatest TNA wrestler of all time. I'm going to go with Styles and Omos.
Yeah, me too. I think, make AJ Grand Slam champion is a big deal still.
And they're very high on Omos, clearly, and you know, we haven't really seen anything of him in the ring, but from what they've been able to do, it's worked. It's succeeded. I love the camera angles that make him look like 20 times bigger.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that will again happen at Mania. New Day have a chance to once again launch others into stardom, because that's just what they do. They're so well established at this point that they can put over dudes and make them big deals. Like you said, they're going to bump their ass off for Omos, so they'll make him look like the biggest, baddest dude around.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And like you said, AJ Styles, Grand Slam champion, no brainer.
Yeah. Yep, exactly.
All right. Let's go to another singles match on this card. We have The Miz taking on Bad Bunny. And this is the obvious one. Bad Bunny is going to win. I don't know how. I don't even know how you get there. Do you find some way to create some division with Miz and Morrison? Who knows? But Bad Bunny's walking out of this the winner. But, I mean, does Miz really lose? Because Miz gets to go home and be with his lovely wife. How can you lose after that?
Yeah. No, exactly. And, you know, it'll be fun. You know, Bad Bunny's all in on it.
Not representative of my thoughts on him, because I obviously love him. I'm morbidly curious to see what the crowd thinks of Bad Bunny. Very morbidly curious, because if they're like any other WrestleMania crowds and celebrities, I fear for his reaction. I mean, these people booed Al Roker 4 years ago. I don't trust that anybody as far as I can throw them.
That's true.
I hope that they cheer him, because he's obviously all in with it, and he's done a great job, but I can't trust WrestleMania's celebrities.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, I think Bad Bunny's cool enough that, you know, people...
I would hope so, but again, like I said, boo Al Roker for no reason. You lose all my trust at all whatsoever.
That's fair.
Oh, you're talking about them booing Al Roker because he has cancer?
Well, because for whatever reason, like 4 years ago, when he was the ring announcer for...
I remember that.
Tina and Nikki, the crowd in Orlando booed him. I don't understand. Very weird.
I'm sorry. I thought you meant he was coming back to do Tampa.
No. This is what happened. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm just. I hope that they're very receptive to him, but I don't trust wrestling.
That's fair. Let's see.
Sorry. I blanked. I don't know why my dumbass thought we were doing the 21. We got two championship matches. Let's start with the women's. The main event, if you will, Sasha Banks defending the SmackDown Women's Championship against Bianca Belair.
Yeah, I mean, I think Bianca needs to win, which, you know, I get that Sasha's title reign hasn't been very, it's been a little underwhelming. I get that. You know, it's kind of what happens when you make her work with Carmella for...
Well, I mean, it's not only that, it's the fact that, you know, say whatever you will, they're kind of pigeonholing them. They get like one segment, two segments if they're lucky per night, and if it's the second segment, it's like a pre-match interview or an immediate post-match.
Well, yeah, because it kind of feels like, you know, with Bayley, she kind of went above and beyond to make things count, and make her time count, and I don't know.
Because they were trying to make Bianca a big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only so much you can do, like I said, when you have one segment and when you're just kind of coasting.
Yeah,
you're going off of this, and they haven't really had, you know. I think they did what they could with the tag stuff. My biggest issue with that the entire time was not the concept, but the fact that they just gave them two title shots out of thin air.
Yeah,
and you know, I think the last few weeks have been, you know, solid or what have you, but like when you get only one segment per night and possibly a second, and have it just be Bianca doing an interview before a match. You can't, there's nothing to work with.
Mm-hmm.
If you get one opportunity, that's it. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. It's not like, if this was in the summer when they were commanding the entire show, I guarantee this feud would be like 10 or 15 times better because they would have more chances with which to work with because they were guiding and controlling the show. This one, with this feud, it feels like it's part of the show. It's not dominating the discussion. Which, for a match of this magnitude, quite honestly, it should. Whether you think that it's going to be in the main event or not, a match of this magnitude should be dominating the conversation, but it's just part of the show.
Yeah,
which is a big issue with TV in general.
Well, yeah, and I agree, and I don't want to talk about where it should be on the card. There's no merit in having that conversation.
No merit.
I think Bianca should win, you know, coronation and go from there. I mean, you know, we kind of saw with Cena and Batista, and I think it could be a similar thing with Bianca and Rhea.
Although I think one instance would be a little bit too hot shotty.
Yeah, we can get to that later. But yeah, I'm going to go with Bianca.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Bianca also. I think that if they miss the opportunity again with her to crown her, because this is now, you didn't do it at Phoenix. You didn't do it in New York. You didn't do it in Portland. You had her get snuffed out on the road to WrestleMania by Charlotte last year. So that's four times. You've gone all in. You had her win the Rumble. You can't miss on the fifth try.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, with the women who are at the top of the company, who've been at the top, who've reigned at the top for as long as they have, the only person who was a late bloomer in terms of how quick they gave success to, was Becky.
Yeah.
And if you think of that, so they coordinated Charlotte almost 2 years into her run with the NXT title run. They immediately coordinated her after she got called up. With, you know, Alexa, that was almost right away after she got to the top. Asuka speaks for itself. Say what you want about her, but they obviously put her on a huge pedestal literally right away. She was champion within like 6 months. Bayley took a while also, but to be fair, it only took 2 years in real time. And obviously it took, and then after she got called up to Raw, she won the title in February after debuting in August. Bianca has been on TV and has been a fixture for 4 years now. She has nothing to show for it besides the Rumble win. If you're serious about somebody, you need to get them something within like 4 or 5 years of them being on TV. That's what I think. So I think missing this would be a mistake, because I don't think that prolonging this feud as of right now, as it stands, does anything for anybody. And I've seen people suggest, oh yeah, maybe have Bayley cost Bianca the title. No, absolutely not. If she's anywhere near that match, I will literally turn the show off. I do not want that to happen. Just coronate Bianca. Sasha, you can do Bianca Sasha 2 at SummerSlam after Bianca takes care of, you know, whoever else afterwards. So just roll with it. In my opinion, it would be a mistake for Sasha to win, even though I feel for her fans from this perspective of they haven't seen their favorite wrestler win at WrestleMania ever.
Yeah.
I see how you're looking at me.
Well, they'll be okay.
Yeah. I feel like we should double back before we go into the Drew match, which is the final match of Saturday.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm going with Bianca. I feel like we should double back to the previous night, which is a special WrestleMania edition of SmackDown.
Yes.
Because we do have a couple of interesting matches in this. The first is a fatal four-way for the SmackDown Tag Team Championships. Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode will defend against the Street Profits, Rey and Dominic Mysterio, and Otis and Chad Gable. I think they're losing the belts. I would love if they lost it to the Street Profits, but I can also see them losing to Rey and Dominic.
Yeah, I'd be fine with it going to Rey and Dominic. I think that'd be pretty cool. You know, I'm not sure what entirely more there is for Rey to do. I know he's got the new contract for a couple of years, so yeah, why not go with that and have a fun run with it for a while, and that'd be good.
Yeah, I think I could definitely see Rey and Dom win, like you said. I'd like to see them go to the Street Profits as well, but I could respect it. I can make a case for pretty much anybody except for Dolphin. I think they need to lose the titles here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then we're also getting the Andre on Friday, so there will be an Andre. No word on if the women's one is happening. I don't think that this is going to be for anything specific. Nope. I'm going to run down the list real quick. Akira Tozawa, Angel Garza, Cedric Alexander, Drew Gulak, Elias, Eric from Viking Raiders, Gran Metalik, Humberto Carrillo, Jackson Ryker, Jey Uso, Kalisto, King Corbin, Nissa Dorado, Mason Slapjack from the former Retribution, Buddy Murphy, Mustafa Ali, Ricochet, Shelton Benjamin, Shinsuke Nakamura, T-Bar, who's also from almost called Redemption, and Tucker! So there's a couple of names who I say, yeah, if they don't win, this is bullshit. That's Jey Uso. To a lesser extent, King Corbin, just because Corbin already has one under his belt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ricochet and Shinsuke, and I think Shinsuke should win.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Shinsuke. He was the immediate person that I saw. I was like, yeah, he should win, and he's probably going to win. I didn't see Jey Uso on here at first. I could see that just from the perspective of, okay, he's been a main player. I know he loses a lot, but I could see him winning. Corbin, like you said, I would normally think so, but he already does have one Andre. I don't think they'd give him a second one, especially considering that, you know, I know they threw this together or whatever, but like, if someone was going to try and win a second one, I feel like they would have them talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And Corbin's a guy who they would absolutely have talked about that, but he's doing the match with Drew on Monday. So I don't think he's going to win. Ricochet would be cool. But apart from that, yeah, I think Nakamura is going to win.
Yeah, I think Shinsuke's a good pick. I think, you know, Murphy's a guy who could use it as well. Yeah, I'll go with Shinsuke, though.
Yeah. Now back to the first night of WrestleMania, what's expected to be the main event for the WWE Championship. It's Bobby Lashley defending his crown against Drew McIntyre. If you asked me maybe a month ago, I would have said Drew, just because they've been dying to get Drew that big pop in front of the crowd, and I could still see him getting that. Bobby's doing really good work lately, and I don't know if they're going to try to, you know, get something in here where the Hurt Business costs him the belt. I think that's done now.
Say like
Shelton cost him the belt or something like that. I don't know. Like, that'd be a really cheap fucking way. But I would love to see Bobby retain. I think Bobby has a lot of promise with the belt on him. He's carrying the belt well. He looks like a champion. Not that Drew doesn't, but I mean, this will be Drew's, what, fourth reign? Third?
Because he beat Brock and then he beat Randy, and so third.
So third. Yeah. I feel like we can wait on that for a little bit. But I mean, either way, I don't think this is one where the winner is necessary or the loser necessarily like comes out of it looking bad in my eyes. You can go either way with this one. I would rather see Bobby.
Yeah, I would too. I mean, I get, you know, wanting Drew to have his moment because he didn't get it against Brock, and you know he did do a good job kind of keeping things together during the pandemic and all that, but. It just doesn't feel like you've done enough with Lashley having the title to make a switch right away.
I agree. I think I can see both happening. I can see the logic for both. But I don't know if they're done yet with Bobby as champ. I know that they're obviously trying with Drew, and it obviously makes sense to try with him, but I don't know if they're done with this yet. I don't know if we're done with this yet either, because this feels like it's gonna be a long play, which I wouldn't have a problem with. Because, like, what the hell else are they?
Yeah, what else are you going to do, especially with Drew? Unless you're just going to keep running him and Bobby as, like, a match for the next couple months, which they can. But I think this is one of the ones where, like, you know, Miz comes into WrestleMania as champ, he leaves as champion. Yeah, there was some extra fuckery thrown in there, but then you had the actual title switch happen a month later. I think you could see that here with Bobby and Drew. The one thing I will say is I am paying attention to where this falls on the card. And the only reason I say that is because, like, you know, yes, Bianca and Sasha is main event worthy. If by some chance that Bobby and Drew winds up earlier on the card than Sasha and Bianca, I think that Drew retains no matter what. If it's the main event, I think you're throwing a little bit of a wrinkle in there, and Drew will probably come out the champion. But I think if that match is earlier on the card, Bobby's definitely retaining. They obviously wouldn't waste a Drew championship win in the middle of the card, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for sure.
All right, now let's move on to night two. Night two of WrestleMania. We begin with a singles match for the United States Championship. It is Sheamus challenging Matt Riddle. I'm just going to say Riddle retains.
I mean,
yeah, people aren't going to like it, but Sheamus is going to put away.
That's fair. Yeah, I mean, I
don't like it either, but and people aren't going to like it, but Sheamus is.
Okay. Yeah, we'll go with Riddle.
All right. Who we got next? We got a singles match between Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Logan Paul will be in the corner of Sami Zayn. I'm going to run with Kevin Owens in this one.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you think about it, KO did get the win last year against Seth.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. But if you think before that, he had nothing at 35 because he didn't wrestle. 34, like, were part of the Bryan match, him and Zayn. They lost that, obviously. 33, he was in the United States title match. That was obviously a stinker.
Yeah, bad.
32 had a ladder match. He didn't win. You kind of haven't had a real singles Kevin Owens win in front of a crowd. As much as it would be cool if Sammy won, There's no real loser in this match because we all win. I'm going to go with KO. And he is going to jump off that goddamn pirate ship if he is the last thing that he does.
No, yeah.
Which apparently, by the way, they're making a pirate ship entrance.
Oh, yeah.
The state, that's cool. Cool as hell.
No, he's definitely doing it this year. I will also go with Kevin Owens. You know, Sammy doesn't need to win.
No, he doesn't. Because he's Sami Zayn. And Sami Zayn never wins anything. And he's still popular, genius, awesome. So, yeah, KO needs to win.
All right. Big E is defending his Intercontinental Championship against Apollo Crews. I've liked how this feud has played out. I think Big E retains.
Yeah, I think he's going to retain as well. You know, I'm kind of surprised they didn't add a couple other people to it, but it's just been the two of them. So, you know, it's fine. I think it's been a good feud. Yeah, I don't know that Apollo should take the title off Big E. Maybe not yet. Know. It's hard.
I don't know because I know that, you know, the Federation is the best when it's a face baby face promotion, but you haven't picked many heels to win.
Mm.
And, you know, Apollo said that he was going to be a Nigerian drum fight now. I'm intrigued to see how this all plays out. But I think I know that the point is obviously to put E over huge, but why not give it to Apollo for like a month? He can win this match because it's his specialty, and E can come back with a specialty of his own win, and they can just blow it off in the early summer. Like these two are doing pretty great work with each other. They're seem to be pushing each other to be better and to do better. I don't think he's hurt with a loss here because I think it boosts Apollo and it keeps the feud going, and they kind of have to considering that they've had Apollo lose every time going in. I know that that's not something that they're shy about doing, but like I'm going with Apollo just to be different because I think that, you know, giving Crews a run with the IC title, even if it's short, I think he's earned it.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
All right, The Fiend, Bray Wyatt, flanked by Alexa Bliss, taking on Randy Orton. And I am going to probably be in the minority of people who believe that Randy Orton should win this. From what I've seen over this feud the last couple months, this seems like something that I would much rather see Randy get the comeuppance over The Fiend, even after fucking setting him on fire, even after, you know, Fiend came back and Alexa won. You know, I look at the two of them and I say, Randy beating Fiend does a little bit more for Randy than Fiend beating Randy. I don't see what Bray's going to get out of this one, other than just being absolutely fucking creepy. Which, I mean, you already get him being absolutely fucking creepy with him winning or losing just by simply existing.
That's a good point.
That's a very good point. See, because I guess the fear that would come out of this, and again, it wouldn't surprise me if they did this. The fear would be if The Fiend wins and if Drew wins the title, then you know what's coming next. That would be Drew. And, you know, people will have their opinions and their takes on that. But you're right in the sense that, like, yes, you know, Fiend getting a win for him like that is, I guess, important to a degree. But, like, this is just common storytelling with somebody trying to rid themselves of a monster. And the best ending for that is not to have the monster win. You have the hero of the story win. And I think that two things will happen. I think Orton's going to win because you basically just sold me on that, and it definitely makes sense. And two, not encouraging this, of course, but I can very easily see Orton RKOing Alexa. And I'm actually surprised that they didn't add a stipulation. This is a straight up singles match, kind of freaks me out a little bit.
Because we saw it at WrestleMania 33 and it wasn't particularly good.
It's because they decided to play fun with the screen projector.
But yeah, now that you could actually lean into that, I don't know why you wouldn't. So I'm kind of hoping that they still do. You know, just it's if they do a straight one-on-one match, it's going to be kind of hard for people to get into, I think.
It's going to be interesting. I'll be intrigued.
Yeah. Moving on now to the championship matches on this second night card. Even though I do think I should ask with who you have winning the tag title, I already said I think Naomi and Lana should walk out of night two as the champions.
Yes.
Who do you guys have winning the first night? Do you think they beat Shayna and Nia on night two?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm also going with Naomi and Lana and beating Shayna and Nia.
Yeah, because I like this pairing more than most, but like I don't see the point in having Shayna and Nia beat whoever wins that match going into it, because like everything just feels so stale, and anything to provide a jolt would, you know, be okay with me, especially just in that division. And if Nia and Shayna lose, I know they'll still want to be attacking, and I appreciate that, but like you can have them move on to the main title scene, because Lord knows that the main title scene on Raw kind of needs it.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially Shane.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I would say that Lana and Naomi should be tag team champions after this.
All right. For the Raw Women's Championship, Asuka is defending against Rhea Ripley. We'll find out on Raw if Charlotte is cleared and if they'll add her to this match. But let's just assume that Charlotte's not going to be at WrestleMania at all, which is not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing if she misses a Mania in my eyes. I mean, hell, Bayley's not on the card right now. So.
Yeah, I think Charlotte not being on Mania is, I think, just more like, wow, that's actually a thing that's happening, more than like, I think, you know, a situation where it should be outraged. But like, at the same time, there's like no spot for her right
now. Yeah.
Because they've already made the Asuka Rhea Ripley t-shirts, so I don't even think that they're going to be adding her to this. So the only possible thing that they could do in this scenario would be to have an impromptu Bayley Charlotte match, which I wouldn't be mad about, but at the same time, it's like, you know, you don't have to force it if it's not there.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is the conflict going on with me with Bayley, is the fact that I want to see her on my television, but I also don't want them to force anything, which is why I'm super thankful that as of right now, she's not just being thrown in that tag title, you know, contenders match, because that would just be like, oh, okay, you're just randomly pairing up her up with Carmella, huh? So that doesn't work for me. If it's not there, it's not there.
Yeah. No, that's fair. No, I mean, as far as this match,
I'm in a conflict.
It's tough because it almost feels like Charlotte getting added and winning would be the best option, because
I don't think so.
Well, because if you have Rhea lose, then, you know, she's here for nothing. She's starting a career with a loss.
I disagree for the reasons that we've discussed here, and because like in the case of this being like the young upstart versus the veteran mainstay, the veteran mainstay can put the upstart in their place for a little bit before the upstart conquers the, you know, the teacher, so to speak. You can have that happen at SummerSlam. You can crown Rhea. But I think that while it would inject life into the division and it's desperately needed, it doesn't solve anything besides just creating a little bit of a shockwave. Because after that, it's like, okay, well, you just had Asuka be champ since August, and you obviously didn't have any faith in her whatsoever, because she wasn't even supposed to be champion going into Mania. And then you get her in a Mania match against somebody of her caliber, and then you had her lose? For what?
Yeah, that's fair.
Because like, it's just like I said, doing a title change, it's fun in concept, and I would respect them for, you know, pushing new talent and whatnot, but it's like, at the same time, you're not solving anything by having Rhea be champion. Because she has the same pitfalls. If they don't care, and if the system is still broken, it doesn't matter who the bid players are. So I think making everything static and keeping Asuka as champion, and then continuing to try and effort that along, building Rhea up through defeat, having Charlotte come back and, you know, kind of being just there for somebody else, and then you have the tag stuff going on, you have a good hierarchy. Maybe you add one or two additional players to it, and you're fine. You just have to stay committed to it. Because you still haven't done Asuka, I mean, they've done the singles, but you still haven't done Asuka Shayna feud. You still haven't given them pay-per-view time to work, which I think they would succeed in. There's still stuff to do with Asuka.
Yeah, no, that's a good point when you put it that way. I can get behind that.
We talked about this before. They've done Asuka dirty so many times in the past. Give her a win. What's the hurt? Everyone will be happy.
Yeah.
And Rhea is not Bianca. They just started this up. So unless you pull a Diesel with Rhea, then, you know, I don't see the point in crowning her just yet.
Yeah.
Bianca is more urgent than Rhea, as we've talked about on this podcast before. So I think giving Asuka the win here is okay. And I'm going to root for Asuka to get the win.
Yeah. I'm also going to go with Asuka in this. I don't think Rhea loses anything by not winning this match.
Nope, especially
I think she has plenty of time to be. She's what, 22? She has plenty of time to go be great in this fucking industry.
Yeah, she turns 25 in October. Like,
okay,
pardon she's still me, a. But, you know, she's yeah, still
yeah.
Fuck. So give Asuka her signature win at WrestleMania. We can move on and go about it. I think it would be a travesty of justice, in the words of Seth Rollins, if Asuka wasn't the win here. And now, the Universal Championship match, the main event of the main event of the granddaddy of them all, featuring the champion, Roman Reigns, the Royal Rumble winner, Edge, and Daniel Bryan, who tapped his way or Morse coded his way into... getting himself into a championship ball game. So, man, go ahead.
Well, you talk about the fans. This is a one match where I have no clue what they're going to do.
Oh my God.
Hell no.
I don't care. Like, it's just, I think the atmosphere is going to be awesome.
Yeah.
This should be an indie atmosphere. If there's any match that, like, fans just lose their sense of fandom. I mean, okay, Roman Reigns stands will just do what they do. We know that. But... if there's any match that if you're just a fan of wrestling and you want to lose your fandom, you have three equally awesome wrestlers to do it to, because Roman is putting in massively great work as a heel.
Mm-hmm.
Edge is obviously making his big return, his big dramatic return to a WrestleMania main event, to a championship match to try to win his first championship back. We haven't seen Edge live in a wrestling ring since the Rumble. So that's gonna be fucking awesome. And then you got Daniel Bryan, who doesn't matter what he does, he's the fans will always love Daniel Bryan. So you really cannot go wrong with whoever wins. I'm just gonna stick with Edge because I do think that the redemption story, the comeback story, is bigger than anything else in this match. But if Bryan were to win, and then you end the show with Bryan on top, I think it could set up a pretty big feud for the summer between him and Edge, while Roman just goes and becomes a family man for a minute.
Yeah, it's so hard to make a pick because I can see any of the three of them winning. I mean, even Roman retaining isn't the worst thing in the world here, I don't really think.
Especially if you just have to be Bryan.
Yeah, so I don't know. If I had to pick, I think I would go with Edge, you know, for the reasons outlined, but I'm not super confident in it.
He's talking like he's the ultimate opportunist again. He's talking a lot of shit.
Yeah.
They're doing a good job with him. I think that the ultimate opportunist is going to return. Going to pin Bryan. He's going to win the Universal Championship. I'm not going to pin Roman. There's still going to be some meat there. But I think of all the scenarios that play out, I think there's two that just cannot and should not happen. Roman shouldn't be pinned or made to submit. And Edge should be pinned or made submitted.
Mm-hmm.
Because so Bryan has to take the fall regardless. And he'd be the kind of guy to do that. You can't have Roman be pinned yet because he's Roman Reigns. There's no reason to do that right now. And the reason that they probably have this be a three-way is because he's probably getting protected. And Edge is coming back. You had him win the Rumble. You're going through the character change right now, but it makes no sense to pin. So Bryan has to take the fall regardless. And I think that Bryan will have Roman set up to win. Edge will interfere. You know, there's no DQ in a triple threat match, so maybe he'll hit him with a chair or something. Hit Bryan with a spear, 1, 2, 3. Edge is the Universal Champ. That's how I see it happen.
Yeah. No, I mean,
I think you lose nothing by having Roman lose here.
No, that's...
And you protect him, and Edge, he's coming back. They're doing the triumphant stuff. Again, his character's changing, but, like, you can't have him come here for nothing.
Yeah.
If it was one-on-one, I'd be a little more skeptical, but, like, it's not anymore, so it's like, come on, man. You have an easy scenario right in front of you.
Yeah. No, okay. That's fair.
This is going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
This is the match that I'm looking forward to the most because it's been the best built match.
Yeah.
Agreed. This has been, you know, I wasn't on the Triple Threat a couple weeks ago, and after Fastlane and what happened the following SmackDown, I was all for it. I completely flipped on having this triple threat. It's going to be dramatic. I think, you know, not just obviously the character work of Roman has been excellent, but I think Edge has really stepped up his game and gone back to the Edge that we love. And I'm ready to see some action on Sunday. That's going to be a fire fucking match, and I hope it exceeds expectations. I hope it's the triple threat main event that we can talk about again, because we're not even talking about the other one.
Yeah, sure.
I guess Randy Batista was good, but you know the first match with yeah. Bryan and Triple H was so good that you know we don't even really talk about that match a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully this is the one that, you know, when we look back 20 years later and there's a reality era version or whatever era you want to call this, you know, people are looking back fondly on this match and the Edge comeback win. Looking fondly back on the Edge comeback win.
Pierce, I'm glad that you said fondly, because I was going to say, oh, what are you talking about, Pierce? There's a triple threat match that happened 2 years ago that everyone talks about once a week.
That's true.
Oh yeah, I mean, but yeah, that then again, you know,
exactly
wasn't a good match. So yeah, it wasn't a good match. It is what it is. Sorry for forgetting that one. I know I kind of feel bad now. I forgot about that one, but yeah. Anything else about this upcoming weekend's WrestleMania? Superstars that are not on the card that we would like to see them. I mean, I know one, but. You know, who the fuck knows what? Just give her a ding dong hello. Fuck. Give her a fucking segment.
Yeah, they should do something. I mean, it's just kind of stupid. But
yeah, I mean, it obviously sucks not to see her. It sucks not to see, you know, Becky Lynch. It sucks not to see Brock. I mean, it's going to be different.
We're probably not going to see Cena.
Yeah. Like, it's cool that, you know, they're kind of, you know, they have fans back. They're kind of doing what they can, but it still is clearly not. A traditional WrestleMania.
That's about five major names that we just threw out there that aren't gonna aren't currently on this card.
And the shows are gonna be
Cena, Brock, Bayley, Charlotte. I forgot the other
Becky.
Becky, yeah.
Becky. That's five. Yeah. Five, and only one of the horsewomen are on this card.
Mm-hmm.
Ronda's not on this card. Six. So
yeah,
it's crazy.
So, I mean, no Triple H match for the second time.
Well, I'm fine with that.
I know, I'm fine with it. No, I know. I'm just saying, like, okay, we're still, and no Undertaker matches. Well, which I know we've done before, but like, still,
it's just like, I don't know. It doesn't really feel like WrestleMania, you know. I think they're betting heavily on the fans and the environment instead of. I don't want to say they're not putting out the best show they can because there are limitations, but
they're not.
Yeah,
you talk about limitations, but like. They've had 3 months to prepare for this. We knew in January that they were doing two nights, and they've done a poor job. They have for the most part. You know, certain things are hitting. The triple threat match is definitely one of the highlights. I really liked Big E and Apollo Crews and whatnot, but nothing the women are doing are that intriguing. They've turned both divisions into kind of a shit show. And yeah, I mean, I think also part of this, and I was thinking this yesterday. They're doing what they can with the Thunderdome when they have to because of the situations around here, but like nothing feels like we're going into WrestleMania. And I think part of that is the fact that they have no, you know, added gusto to it, and we're missing the fans. We just are. Because the fans, for all these moments that happen on the road to WrestleMania, the fans help make part of that.
Well,
and we're now 13 months removed from that, and it's just such a...
And no, it plays a part. I mean, every single baseball broadcast you've watched this year, they go out of their way to say how nice it is to have fans back.
They do.
Like
every single one.
So it plays a part. I mean, it's different. And, you know, again, the fans at actual WrestleMania, it's going to be good. It's going to provide a good environment. But then, you know, next Monday, we're just back in the Thunderdome again till around SummerSlam, probably.
That's right. I am at Cameron Santo, Rob's at RobMill31, Chris is at Chris M. Novak. Thank you for joining us for our WrestleMania preview. We hope you enjoy this weekend's show. We'll be back next week to recap WrestleMania. guess we also recap the Raw after, and then the first NXT on Tuesday night. And I guess I also think that means we'll recap TakeOver Stand and Deliver too, because that'll also happen. That'll also have happened when we come back. If you missed it, the Stand and Deliver preview went up on Friday night into Saturday. You can go listen to that. That'll happen on Wednesday and Thursday. So full slate for this weekend's WrestleMania. Pay attention to the Twitter at BarbersChairNet. I will be posting classic WrestleMania recap shows. These guys did a Road to WrestleMania a few years ago when they were on their way to Jersey. So we got a couple of those shows, and I know you've done some other WrestleManias that we'll throw up on the Twitter for you guys to go and check out and get you ready for this weekend's big show. Patreon.com/BarbersChairNet upcoming this week. Barbershare Network, sorry. I got to remember that. Patreon.com/BarbersChairNetwork. Come up this weekend, we will have the March edition of the WWE 25. So be on the lookout for that, man. $10 subscribers, you get everything from the 25 to summer sessions to this upcoming extra innings edition of the 40-40 Club, where hopefully I get to talk about happy times with the Cubs. I was ready to... throw myself against the fucking wall the other day, but then the Sox started blowing games, so I'm kind of good right now. Good mood right now. We'll see if Scott's in a better mood next week when we link up on the main feed. I know there's also a ball don't lie out. God, Bulls fans are losing their shit. I don't know why we're even having conversations of, the Bulls need to take out and get the top four seed so they can keep the pick. Shut up. Shut the fuck up. So be on the lookout for all that, man. All coming on Barber's Chair very, 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 very soon. But let's get out of here. We hope you've enjoyed this 2-hour edition of Ruth Discretion. Enjoy WrestleMania. I ain't got shit else to say, man. I'm just going to see y'all after the big show. Y'all take it easy.